This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Well, I'm just waiting now for my first guest, Dan Harris. He is the co-anchor of ABC's Nightline and the weekend edition of Good Morning America. He wrote 10% Happier, number one New York Times bestseller, and then launched a 10% Happier podcast and app. And so I'm looking forward to talking to him in a few minutes. He's written a book called Meditation for Fidgety Skeptics. And since so many of us are very fidgety lately, with everything that's going on in the world, I think this is an ideal time to look into this book. Meanwhile, I want to remind everyone that Father's Day is coming up, and you still have time to order from MyPillow, the most wonderful pillows in the world. They really are great. It's amazing. Before I had this pillow, I did not realize how important having a great pillow was. And the minute you put your head on this pillow, I just fall asleep. So it's a great pillow. It's a wonderful pillow for your dad, a great gift. All you have to do is go to MyPillow.com and use my promo code Patsy, P-A-T-Z-I, and you can order it, and they still have time to ship it in. So just think about doing that. That's a wonderful gift. And I also want to thank everyone who wrote to me about the interview with Bill Larson, our legal eagle here on Joy on Paper. He was on the program last week, and we talked about how you can copyright one word. And I had been very skeptical, thinking about the word skeptical. I did not think that one could actually do that. But that's why I am not a lawyer. And Bill Larson is. And Bill Larson is has a firm here in the Tampa Bay area. He has two offices, one in St. Petersburg and one in Tampa. And he will answer all your intellectual property questions, because as you see, you need to know what you can do legally. And he's just a wonderful guy. He's always so happy to answer your questions. So do check him out at Larson and Larson. And I think in a minute I'm going to be having my wonderful, wonderful interview that I've been really looking forward to, because this is an Audible book, and June is Audible Book Month, and everyone who loves books will love Audible books. So I am so happy to welcome to the program in a few minutes. I think we're just getting him on the line. And, you know, he's calling in from New York, and he's always so busy. He's a busy guy. And so it's really exciting that I'm able to get him here on Joy on Paper. Now, as I said, it is Audible Book Month. June is a wonderful month for getting Audible books. There are lots of great deals. And I am so crazy about Audible books now. I have just found so many that I love. My favorite is still A Gentleman from Moscow, and I'm just waiting now to see when we're going to get Dan on. And I was trying to think, you know, when you're looking for a book, another one that really comes to mind, if you're looking for Audible books, any Sharon McCrum book. I have found that her books, because they are Southern books, and the Audible versions really capture that sound of the South, and it's so much fun to listen to her books in an Audible version. So I'm trying to think what other I've been listening to so many that I have to just think lately. I do like suspense books. It's funny, you know, to listen to a suspense book just before you go to sleep is really nice. I really enjoy that. I don't know. I've been doing that lately when I get my head down on that my pillow and I manage to get like 20 minutes of an audible book, and I like that. So that's another thing. And we're just having so much fun. It looks like Ed is having fun in the control room because we have somehow dropped or not gotten Dan, but we're going to get him. We're going to get him. And I'm not going to be fidgety about it because it's so funny that one of the things I'm trying to do is to channel. I'm trying to channel Dan Harris and some of the things that he talks about in this audible book. And one of them, of course, is the breathing exercises, which are called pranayama. And so you are supposed to be calm and to breathe steadily. And so I could just try that. I don't know if there's not actually a meditation where you're just supposed to keep talking and talking. But, you know, in truth, though, Dan Harris does talk about how he talks, how he meditates. And that's why the book is actually very funny, because he does talk about the, how shall I say, the voices in his head. And it's a very, so it makes it a very, very, very amusing book when he starts off with his meditation. And so I really, okay. Are you there, Dan?
I'm here.
Okay, good. Well, I've been blabbing for a few minutes because we didn't get you on, so I've been talking about how I am trying. I am trying some of your exercises from your book. So I was going to do just a breathing one, but I thought then if I just sit here breathing, people think I'm crazy. So I am glad that you are on. It is such a joy to welcome you to Joy on Paper because and Joy of Audible Books because it is Audible Book Month. And, you know, this book on Audible is so – the problem with this Audible version is that you have to listen to it once just for the humor because you're so often laughing so much that you can't concentrate on meditating. And then let's talk about this book. It's called Meditation for Fidgety Skeptics, and we are so many people are fidgety nowadays, if you ask me. It's really fun.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate that. I appreciate the kind words. I had a lot of fun writing it and even more fun recording the audiobook version with my co-author, Jeff Warren. It really is, the audio format is such a great format for this kind of thing because I write as a broadcaster, I write for the spoken word. And so it was fun to read it out loud. And I also think meditation is the subject that really lends itself to this kind of interactivity. But the reason why I'm interested in the subject is because the backstory is that I had a panic attack on national television back in 2004, which was pretty inconvenient.
Oh, really? I mean, like, only like a zillion people saw you, but that's okay.
There were 5 million people watching at the time, and the YouTube clip, which is available if you just search for panic attack on national television, has many, many millions of views. All of which is great for me. But what actually really is great is that a panic attack is what set me off on this journey that ultimately landed me on meditation.
And it was not just a mental journey. It was an actual physical journey. You took off and did some looking around for people who meditate or don't meditate.
Yeah, so in this most recent book, this is my first book that came out in 2014. It was called 10% Happier, and it was my personal story of becoming a meditator. But this most recent book, Meditation for Fidgety Skeptics, is much more of a how-to book. And we didn't want, Jeff, my co-author and I, we didn't want to make a dry meditation manual, so we wanted to turn it into a kind of gonzo road trip. So we got this big, silly orange bus that was previously occupied by the members of the funk band Parliament Funkadelic, and We wrapped it with 10% Happier decals, and we went off on this cross-country journey where we met all sorts of people, cops, social workers, scientists, celebrities, people who want to meditate but aren't doing it. And then we systematically help them get over the hump. And the result is a book that kind of lists all the primary obstacles to meditation. I can't clear my mind. I don't have time to do this. This is going to, if I get too happy, I'll lose my edge. All the primary obstacles, and we systematically tackle them.
Well, this clearing your mind, that's like a big step. You know, I just, particularly when we listen to this book, your stories of the people that are in your mind are really so funny that we had just stop and think, oh boy, I almost was thinking he could just do a whole comedy routine about the people in your mind and how did you get around them so you can meditate.
Well, so the thing to know, I'm glad you brought up this issue of clearing the mind, because a lot of people don't meditate because they worry, well, I can't stop thinking. And the good news is you don't have to stop thinking. Stopping thinking is impossible. Every 8-year-old tries the experiment of seeing if you can, you know, stop thinking, and it doesn't work. So the point of meditation is not to clear your mind. It is to focus your mind for just a few nanoseconds at a time. And then when you get distracted, which you will a million times, you're going to have all sorts of random thoughts. You know, what's for lunch? Do we need a haircut? You know, where do gerbils run wild? Blah, blah, blah. The whole game is just to notice that you've become distracted and you start again and again and again and again. And this is, it's like a bicep curl for your brain. And the results show up on the brain scans. The brains of people who meditate, they look different. The area of the brain associated with attention regulation is stronger and thicker. And so this is an incredible skill to have. And also noticing you've become distracted, which is the moment when a lot of us type A people believe that we're a failure, is actually a success. Because when you see how crazy you are, when you see all these different like neurotic programs, these little voices that you have in your own head, you know, a planner or an angry person or the various little inner characters that we have, when you see the inner chaos, then it owns you less. It has less control over your actions, and that can prevent us from doing the mindless, dumb stuff that we later regret.
Well, I tell you, it was so funny. So I listened, and then I was in between. I was trying to practice, and then I found out that I had so many of the things that were in your mind got into my mind, and that crazy lazy Susan, you know, that lazy Susan thing really sent me for a loop, because next thing I know, I have to go and investigate lazy Susan. So I spent like two hours looking for the history of lazy Susan. So the book had so many, many benefits. Not only was it great from learning something about meditation, it was also great from learning of things to look up in history. I found it very amusing.
Yeah, I mean, there are many, many meditation books, and there have been for a long time. And there are no really original ideas in my book. The difference is the reason why I got into this game in the first place, other than the fact that meditation was very helpful to me personally, is that I realized that a lot of the meditation books are kind of take themselves a little too seriously. As I've joked, it's like you can kind of hear a pan flute in the background, when you're reading or listening to these books. And so I wanted to do books that are funnier. And so you're talking about the lazy Susan thing. I was just giving, it was an example of the kind of random thoughts that pass through my mind when I'm meditating. And one of them was, you know, who's the Susan after whom they named the lazy Susan, and how did you feel about it? And it's just an example of the kind of dumb stuff that flows through your mind when you're trying to meditate. And I don't even actually be interested to know what the answer to that question is. You may have it. But the point here is that we will, in meditation and in life, be carried away by all sorts of distractions, some of them silly, some of them serious. And the lesson is that you don't have to be carried away permanently. You can see your inner torrent, your inner tumult, with some non-judgmental remove, so that it doesn't yank you around. And that's a game-changing skill.
Well, with your co-author, with Jeff Warren, you do come out with different types of meditation that might appeal to different people, like the 30-second plus meditation or just breathing. Tell us about some of the ways that people can actually put this into practice. What are a few of the ideas that you have there?
Oh, happy to. Jeff Warren, my co-author and really good friend, is this incredible meditation teacher. And I call him Meditation MacGyver because he's just great at coming up with different kinds of meditation for different people, because we're all different. And what works for you might not work for me. And frankly, what works for you right now might not work for you in 6 months, or might not work for you in a different situation. You know, sometimes you want to meditate and you're in the backseat of a car or on a plane. And, you know, there are different kinds of meditation to do in different contexts. And you may have one day, you may have 5 to 10 minutes where you are available to meditate. But other days, you only may have 60 seconds. And so we design all sorts of meditation to fit into various aspects of your life. And we also design meditation that may train specifically your ability to be kind to yourself and to others, which is something that many of us struggle with, especially being kind to yourself. And so we have all sorts of meditations for different purposes at different times.
Well, and I think that it is very important that you've done this, because there are, you know, people have so many different needs. Some I know. Now I was a hippie at one time, so we tried to do deep meditation. I couldn't do it anymore if you paid me cash, but the short bursts of meditation I think are so beneficial, and for people it really, you can just use it to sort of calm your heart rate. It really is a wonderful idea.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of science that suggests it really works. And the science is really in its early stages, but there's been a bunch of research on meditation, and it's been shown to lower your blood pressure, reduce the release of the stress hormone cortisol, boost your immune system. And the neuroscience is particularly interesting because it's been shown to literally rewire key parts of the brain that are associated with stress, or compassion, self-awareness, attention regulation. It's also, and this is of particular interest for me, given that I've, you know, struggled with anxiety and depression most of my life, it's particularly, meditation has been shown to be particularly helpful with those conditions, which are really common and often not discussed, frankly and candidly enough, in public because there's so much stigma attached to them.
And I think also one of the important elements of the book is for people to understand that meditation is not, you know, it's so many people think it's like you have to be Buddhist to do it, that it's a religious experience, and it's not. It's just you don't have to have any religious connotation to it at all.
Well, you're making an excellent point. One of the reasons why I was always very, you know, historically, to the extent that I ever thought about meditation at all, which I really didn't, but I always assumed it was a religious thing and therefore not something I wanted a part of. And even people who are, I would call myself a respectful agnostic, but there are plenty of people out there who are of deep and devout, Jewish or Christian or Muslim faith, and many of those people worry that meditation may be religious in the wrong way, that it would somehow conflict with their pre-existing set of beliefs. And so the good news is that while there are millions of kinds of meditation, the kind of meditation that I talk about in the book is called mindfulness meditation, and it is thoroughly secular. It is simple, scientifically validated, as I said, secular exercise for your brain. And you don't have to join a group or believe in anything or wear special outfits. You know, mindfulness is derived from Buddhism, but it has been stripped of any metaphysical claims or religious lingo. And it really is just about, it's as simple as, the practice is as simple as, in its most basic form, sitting in a reasonably quiet place with your eyes closed, trying to bring your full attention to the feeling of your breath coming in and going out. And then when you get distracted, which you will a million times, gently returning your attention to the breath. That is it, really, in terms of the beginning mindfulness meditation instructions. So there's nothing religious about that. And it's available to everyone, whatever your belief. And it's, you know, if you're a person of faith, I actually think, and I have a lot of friends of faith who will say this, that it can boost the power of your prayer life because you're spending less time in distraction and more time doing what you're there to do. And it's also worth noting that if you're a person of faith, that meditation, there are flavors of meditation within each of the major
that's Abrahamic what I was just going to say traditions. In yeah. all of religion there is that element where you learn this ability to concentrate or to think about, oh, I know I don't get you for a very long time, so I want you to mention about your app and how you came out with this app and what how people can get it.
Yeah, so when I first wrote 10% Happier, I didn't think it was going to turn into much, but it ended up being, and I'm grateful for this, more successful than I thought. So I turned it into a podcast called 10% Happier, an app called 10% Happier, which teaches you how to meditate. And then I wrote a follow-up book called Meditation for Fidgety Skeptics, which is available, you know, in print or in audio form. And I'm worth mentioning that because June is audiobook month. If you want one-stop shopping, there's a website called 10%happier.com.
Yes, and it's great. Everything that people want to know about it is right there. And I think it's a wonderful idea. The world is a very stressful place at the moment. And, you know, for people to get into it's sort of getting in tune with yourself and overcoming all of the anxiety out there, and you managed to do it. I think that you know, you do such a great job on television, and it's always such a joy to watch you. And people don't have to go and see the panic attack; they can just see you as you are now, right?
You can do either. I'm fine. I'm not sensitive about it anymore. It's actually there's a way in which talking about the most embarrassing stuff that's ever happened to you, as soon as you talk about it openly and publicly, it kind of takes the emotional charge out of it and makes it easier, especially if you're using it to help other people.
And you certainly are. And I just want to thank you so much. I know you are on like a big tour here with everybody, but I do want to thank you for being on Joy on Paper today, because I just want people to enjoy Audible books, and this is one that they will enjoy. And as I said, they will listen to it more than once, because the first time around is for the humor, because you are very, very funny. And I loved listening to all the people in your head, Arthur and Randy and all these other people. And I thought it was just very, very amusing. But it is also, as I said, a very helpful book. And people can listen to it the second time and take heed of the lessons that you give them. So you've done a great job.
I really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Okay. Well, bye-bye now. I won't keep you any longer. I know everybody's anxious to talk to you today. So thank you so much, Dan, for being on Joy on Paper.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Woo! Okay. Wow. You know, I it's so funny. This book, because he does throw so many things out there that are on his mind while he's meditating and trying to get to that calm place that we all want to get to. But he was so funny. He's so funny in this book that he keeps mentioning things and wondering why this is that or whatever. And so little things that he would mention, like Lazy Susan, I could now do a book just about Lazy Susans, because once I got obsessed with it, And first, I went to one dictionary, and they said, oh, the first use of it was in 1912. Then another dictionary said the first use of that word was in 1915. And I thought, well, you're two famous dictionaries. At least you should get that right. And so then I started, you know, this is how things happen with me. When I read something or I hear something, the next thing I know, I have to figure out why it is as it is. And so I'm then looking at the use of Lazy Susan in history, and I'm finding out all sorts of things. Of course, it's lovely. I saw that in the olden days there were people who had Lazy Susans that were connected to their kitchen, very big Lazy Susans, there was a door, and they could turn the table, and the cook, maid would be in the kitchen. They would put the food on, then they'd open the door and roll the food out to your dining room table. I thought that was very clever. Maybe we'll have a robot someday who will do that. So the robot will be in the kitchen, put the food on the Lazy Susan, and the door will open, and the food will come around to you. I thought that was really cool. I don't know. Nobody has that anymore, but I thought that was great. Of course, when you go to Japanese restaurants, they have the Lazy Susan, but it's the history of it turned out that the history of the Lazy Susan was very, very interesting, and I spent a good 2 hours learning about Lazy Susans, and all because I listened to this audiobook by Dan Harris called Meditation for Fidgety Skeptics. So anyway, it was fun to talk to him. Now I'm going to take a commercial break, and when I come back from the commercial break, I'm going to answer some of your questions. So let's take it away, Ed.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author? An artist? An inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow. And like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat. I would flip-flop all night long. I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you can move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed. It's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry MyPillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever.
MyPillow is now offering 50% off their 4-pack special.
Support Joy on Paper and local authors. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I, or call 1-800-871-1543. That's 800-871-1543. From the author of gut-wrenching novels Guns Up and Gunner's Glory, now a gut-wrenching comedy, Section 8. One fan writes, Section 8 is inspired insanity. Johnny Clark should receive the Pulitzer Prize and his commitment papers in the same ceremony. You will laugh till it hurts. Section 8, it's 1946, and President Harry Truman has two goals in life. Dump the U.S. Marine Corps and get reelected. Can he convince Congress that the Marine Corps is obsolete? He'll try, but first he wants to use them one last time. There's something he needs them to do. A little mission to China to steal something that one of his contributors need. It's dangerous, but who cares? Marines are expendable, or so he thinks. What could possibly go wrong? A lawsuit by the Vatican? An attempted assassination by a dead assassin? Flamethrower sermons? If that's not enough, there's a missing A-bomb. This book has it all. Even a love story. Remember, Section 8 is only a temporary state. You hope. Written by a true American hero. You'll love this book. Now available on Amazon. So get it today. Section 8 by Johnny Clark. Semper Fi.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Patsy with a Z, and I am back, and I have a wonderful thing happening here. Big Ed in the control room found the clip of Dan Harris having his meltdown.
Yeah, and it was, I think I saw that live, and it was his first morning on Good Morning of America. Good Morning America. It was his first morning to report the news. And for there's a lot of us in this industry that have gone through that first or second time you've actually gone on air, and I think it's the anticipation of waiting for the producers to throw it to you, and you're sitting there and you're thinking, and then they go to you, and you're just all of a sudden now you're not ready, and you're going to hear him. He's going to try to breathe. He's breathing. He's blinking. He's doing anything he can, and eventually he doesn't even get the story headline out where he has to throw it back to Good Morning America. But here's a clip, and this is Diane Sawyer, who's actually introducing it, and then he takes it from there.
And next tonight, something different. Imagine millions of people watch your life come unglued, an all-out panic attack on TV. It happened to our Dan Harris, but his journey of discovery brought back some lessons for all of us about our lives, too, and he's telling us about it tonight, Dan.
Hi, Diane. This is a very personal story, as you know, because you were right there when it all started. Sometimes there are things holding us back from being happy, and we're not aware of it until life hits us over the head with a frying pan. And that is what happened to me.
From ABC News, this is Good Morning America.
Welcome to the most embarrassing day of my life.
We're going to go now to Dan Harris, who's at the news desk, Dan.
Good morning, Charlie and Diane. Thank you.
This is me 10 years ago. And the reason this is the most embarrassing day of my life is not that it looks like I've been attacked by a blow dryer and a can of hairspray. No, it's that I am about to freak out on national television. Health news now. One of the world's most commonly prescribed medications may be providing a big bonus. Researchers report people who take cholesterol-lowering drugs called statins for at least 5 years may also lower their risk for cancer. But it's too early to prescribe statins slowly for cancer production.
At this point, I realize I'm helpless, so I bail right in the middle.
That does it for news. We're going to go back now to Robin and Charlie.
All right. Thanks very much, Dan Harris at the news desk with some of the headlines of the morning. Want to go to Tony Perkins now. He is...
Once the fear subsided, humiliation rushed in. I knew with rock-solid certainty that I had just had a panic attack on national television. So why would I tell you this very embarrassing story? Because that on-air meltdown was the culmination of something that had been building for years, something I never stopped to address. It's something we all battle, whether we have panic attacks or not. Call it the voice in your head.
It's where I feel stress. Or
it's
feel
the inner narrator that can control us.
Highly critical.
Get in the way of living the life we want to lead. For Brian Simmons, it was outbursts of anger.
I would act very reactively.
For Becky Schmitz, it was emotional eating.
Eating was like my security blanket.
And for a young Dr. Mehmet Oz, it was a racing mind that kept him from focusing on one thing at a time.
For me, saying a voice in the head is too benign an expression of what really happens. That massive cacophony that we hear, deafeningly loud.
Does it surprise you at all how much time we all spend fixating on these self-defeating voices we hear?
I have always been surprised how much time we spend wasting on the voices in our head telling us we're not good enough.
In my case, like many Americans, my inner voice was pushing me to succeed.
Annual New Year's party in New York.
This is me in my late 20s.
Thank you, Dan. Dan Harris.
I had my dream job, but I also had doubts about whether I was good enough.
But it's hard to do that. All right, I'm going to try it. 3, 2, 1.
My solution? Become a workaholic.
After 9/11, I volunteered to spend years in war zones where I covered the heroics of our men and women overseas and got a real taste of both the horror and the adrenaline of combat. After years of always barreling forward, when I finally slowed down, it was as if my mind revolted and I got depressed. And so, in my free time, I briefly but stupidly began self-medicating.
And it was those recreational drugs, my doctor would later tell me, that almost certainly produced the on-air panic attack. But losing it in front of 5 million people became a turning point.
It set me off on a strange, unplanned odyssey.
The kind of search so many of us embark upon for answers, understanding, and strength. Ultimately, it would lead me to something I never would have expected, as it has for Dr. Oz and millions of others.
Going inside my mind is no longer going behind enemy lines.
After a journey that involved megachurches, self-help gurus, and brain researchers, what I found is something simple, scientifically tested, and completely free. It's being done by executives, pro athletes, and even the U.S. Marines. It's not a miracle cure, but I like to say it makes you about 10% happier. Much more on that tomorrow night right here.
Right here. And again, Dan, for all of us who've been through this with you, wow.
I say wow, too. I didn't see that live, Ed, so that was quite a thing, huh?
Yeah, but it caught us off guard because I didn't know he was actually going to do that. But when I saw that piece, whatever it was, I think it was a special, I related to it because we've all been there. We've all been... I don't have a problem speaking in front of hundreds, even thousands of people. But when you first start, it's that area of time that you're waiting and your mind just starts. You're saying, okay, I'm going to start with this. And when you hear the producer go, okay, in 3, 2, 1, in 3 seconds, you about lose all the research that you just did because your mind is thinking towards the end and you haven't started. And you could see that even though he had a prompter in front of him, his breathing couldn't keep up with him. And you could see that he was gasping. His face even goes pasty white. And that was 15 seconds, and his face went completely pasty white. And thank goodness that you got somebody like Diane and somebody back in the studio that you can throw it back to seamlessly. It wasn't that apparent. But if nobody was there to go back, he would have been just staring at the camera, you know.
Well, I don't know if you remember, Ed, when I started on my first day, I was so frightened, and I think perhaps you turned white because I don't know if you thought I could make it through. I was so nervous that first day, but you helped me out, and I remember that my first guest was Irene Goodman, and I was so grateful because she is one of those keynote speakers at all of these big conventions, and she gets paid, $35,000 to speak, so... Once she started speaking, I realized, she could take over the program, so I calmed down.
Yeah, I think mine actually first happened. I was doing traffic, and you're in a room basically with some other people, and you now have all the accidents, where they are in Tampa, where they are in Clearwater and St. Pete, and it's on a piece of paper in front of you, and you're sitting there, and you're waiting, and then they throw it to you from the helicopter, and then you just go blank, even though that stuff's right there. Did that where you're trying to talk and you can't get it out. Back to you. It's kind of that scenario right there. But it's just, it hit a home because a lot of us have been there, at some point or another. And like I said, it's just the fact that you can't see the other person. You're sitting there and you're waiting and you say to yourself, I don't want to mess up. I don't want to mess up. I don't want to mess up. And then in that time, you've forgotten everything you're going to talk about, basically.
Oh, that happens to me once in a while, and I think sometimes it's the thing that keeps me going is I look across through the big window, I look at you, and you're so calm, so it calms me down because I get, sometimes with the different authors, I have sometimes a big problem with them where they are... Stop talking.
Yeah, and then, you get the one word answers. Yes, no. And you got to remember too, with TV, you got an IFB in your ear, which is a small little headphone that's in your ear, and you've got producers talking to you while you're doing the story. They'll tell you things like, "Hurry up, speed it up. We got to go to the next one." And you're trying to keep that train of thought, and then they're telling you in your ear constantly. It's like me, if you're talking to an author on the phone and doing an interview, and I'm telling you in your ear, hurry up because so-and-so's on the line and they're waiting for you. That would just completely make you stop.
Exactly.
It just does. But you have to, there's so many things. You have to do 3-4 things at once. So it really hit home. You should go home and just type that in and look at it because to see it, you can get that feel for it right there. I guarantee you, like you said, that first time you sat down and you were worried about this and that, you'll see that just that 15 seconds where he couldn't even get the headline out and he throws it back to the studio because he just completely blanked.
Well, I think everybody will be going today to YouTube and checking that out, because as I said, I had not seen it. So I'm so grateful to you for finding this.
And the one thing that he did say was that now some of us can get through it by just practicing, and then just over time, it just goes away. But you see where he said he started to medicate himself.
Ah, yes.
You know, he was using recreational drugs. I mean, I don't think he was in the back room doing a shot of whiskey or a couple of, you know, Percocets or whatever. I think that he just thought that that would calm him down, and it really doesn't. It doesn't change the brain's thinking, because you're still going to be in that 3 seconds before you go on air, and your brain is still going to go on. Now, you may not be jittery, and you may not be shaking, but the fact is that your brain is still elsewhere. And until you control that part.
Exactly. He mentions that in the book, and it is a very moving section of the book where he talks about how he did take drugs, and he took, you know, heavy stuff, cocaine and ecstasy, and it really messed up his mind. And so something was bound to happen, and it's strange because when you think about what he had done before that, his war correspondent life, mm-hmm. which was very stressful. And he got through all of those broadcasts, you know, from the field there during the first Gulf War.
But like he said, he got his dream job. He got to sit in the chair. You know, Peter Jennings was his idol, and he got to correspond with him. But when you're out in the field, it's just like, you know, going out and talking to people, that's a... Like when you have somebody come in that's going to do an interview before you go on the air, you're just back and forth, like you're just chumming and whatever. It's nice that because that person is there, and you can have the body language, you can have, you know, the interaction between. But then when you go on air, there's that factor that, okay, now who's actually listening other than me and you in a room with no microphones on? And that things like that start to run through your brain. And then, like I said, it just kind of whites everything out. And even though you've got a whole paper in front of you, you can't think enough to just say to yourself, just stick to the paper. And eventually then you get to do that. But the problem, like he said, was he started to turn to recreational drugs, and that was the wrong thing to do.
Oh, absolutely. It's like if I brought in a whiskey here, it wouldn't work. You know, it was funny. I started this program on St. Patrick's Day. In 2015, and with St. Patrick's Day, and everybody's, you know, drinking green beer, and I thought, oh no, I don't need anything to calm me down. Uh-huh. Can you imagine? That would have been quite a show, huh, Ed?
Yeah.
But it is amazing what one goes through in doing a broadcast, because I didn't know You know, when I started, I didn't know anything about radio, and it is exactly as you describe it, that feeling of you're just there and you're talking, and your mind like has so many things happening. And for me, of course, I have all these books that I read, and when I have an author on, and I have this wonderful ability, in some ways it's a great ability, that I can actually visualize a page of a book that I've read. But it comes to me it's not like a photographic memory. So I can have an author here, one on the phone and one in the studio, and I can actually visualize sometimes their actual page. But sometimes I'm talking to one and I'm visualizing the mm-hmm. other's page, and I think, oh gosh, I've got to control it, you know?
Right, and like he said, that it was his dream job. And if you watch that clip just before he goes on, you can hear the producers going in 5, 4, and Dan is fixing his tie and he's looking down, and I can just see the wheels going in his head saying, boy, Dan, this is it. You finally made it. Don't screw it up, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Well, and I really am grateful. Again, as always, you know, I always tell everybody that I salute you at the end of the program, because, and I'll salute you right now, because, again, Ed is always so wonderful, and he comes out with things and helps me so much, and I always appreciate it. You know, one of the things that I wanted to answer a few questions, because I've been getting, I was very happy with all the email I got back about Bill Larson's appearance last week, and talking about how you can copyright one word, because I didn't think it was possible, and an author came out and did a copyright on the word cocky to use in the title of her books, and she's allowed to do it, and she can stop people, other authors, from using that word. I actually didn't think so, but you know, there is Bill Larson telling us that you can do it, and one of the reasons. People ask me, well, why, you know, do I have Bill Larson on so often? And it's because once a month I have Bill Larson on because I want to make sure that people understand the legal ramifications. When I was very young, I didn't understand how important it was to have a really good intellectual property lawyer. You cannot be in this business without at some point getting in trouble. So with writers, it is your valuable property. It is those are your assets. Whatever you write, that's your asset. And that is something that you have to protect. And so when I started the program, one of the things I immediately thought about is to have a lawyer come on to tell people about their legal needs. And I am very upset with all of the recent things that are happening to writers. They are getting so many emails, which are absolute scams. And I just want to warn you, please, please, again, do not send any of your information out to anybody. Do not send your files. I have spoken to writers who actually send their entire file. I mean, they send their doc file to people. And it's crazy. It's bad enough to send a PDF, but then to send your doc file because somebody says, well, we will take your book and we will turn it into a treatment that we can then bring to producers in Hollywood. Or we'll take your book and we will turn it into a script. And they ask you for your file. It is crazy. Do not do that. Because first of all, that's not the way, a script is not written from a book. You don't take, if somebody asks you to send your book so that they can use that as the basis for doing your script, it's crazy. That's not how a script is written. I've written a lot of scripts. I've had them optioned in Hollywood. I know how a script is done. And believe me, we don't take a book, scan in a book and then just go through and pick out the dialogue and turn it into, I mean, this is utterly insane, but they are doing it. I have seen now one scam after another of authors who are coming to me and say, well, I get this message, send this, sign this release. They're going to get me into Hollywood. Look, some of the biggest authors in the world, they don't have Hollywood deals. The chances of you getting a Hollywood deal are not that great, but they are definitely not going to work out if you are just going to send your material out there. There are ways to do it, and I just want to tell you people, please don't send thousands of dollars. I am now in contact with an author who I believe he won't tell me how much he spent, but from the sort of panic in his voice, I think he's spent a couple of $1,000s for somebody who says that they will take his book and turn it into a script. That is not how it is done. A script writer reads a book and has to love a book and has to understand the characters and then work on a script that's completely different from what you have in your book. And that's part of the reason why most authors, people who write novels, cannot write a good script. So please, please don't waste your money. I actually started crying when I talked to this author because I think he's lost a few thousand dollars. And although I hope that maybe he will go to Bill Larson and maybe he can recover something, but this is not the way to get into Hollywood. So please, please don't do that. And I will, over the next few months, I'm going to try to get a few Hollywood producer, agent type people, but real people, to talk to you about how to, how you have to look at Hollywood and be intelligent about it. So that's coming up. And meanwhile, again, I want To remind you that I'm doing this Facebook thing. I have to do Facebook. Sponsors want Facebook, and so I'm asking you please to go to Facebook and like me. It's Radio Joy on Paper. And if you like me, I will like you, and everybody will like everybody in this whole world, because no matter what we want, Facebook is still the place that everybody looks at. And so I really appreciate anyone who goes to Facebook. And next week, I am going to have an author on, a good friend and a wonderful author, Bonsu Brandvik, her third book in her Spirits of the Bellevue Biltmore series. It just came out, and I didn't have a chance to have her on yet. The new book is called Redemption. I do hope that you'll get that. It is the story of the wonderful, beautiful Bellevue Biltmore Hotel, which they tore down, which breaks my heart. But in her book, she is trying to keep the memory of the Bellevue Biltmore going. And I'm choking now because I've been talking a lot. I've talked a lot this time because I didn't have my second guest. And I think my second guest, who was supposed to be here today, actually, probably overslept because of all of the news of everything that was happening last night. And everybody was all tied up and stayed up all night. So it was pretty exciting. And she also has a young child, and I don't know. I think she just was overwhelmed. But I will rebook her. I want her to know that I don't hold a grudge against somebody who cancels at the last minute. All these things happen to us, and so I just want her to know, if she's listening in, and I think she is, that I understand, and you don't have to send me three emails to apologize for canceling at the last minute, because I understand these things. And again, one of the things, what else am I going to do next week? Oh, who do I have? I have so many important people coming on. Well, every author is important, because remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them in an audible version. And remember, this is Audible month. June is Audible Book Month. And wow, you know, Audible books are, the sales are going up. People are enjoying them more and more. I actually didn't like them very much when I first started listening to Audible books, but I now find that they take the place of, when I'm washing dishes, I'll have an Audible book on. Before, I couldn't actually read a book when I was doing the laundry, but now I can listen to Audible books. So make sure that you get an Audible book this month. And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody today. It's a beautiful day and a wonderful day to say something nice to somebody. I said something nice to somebody in Wawa's the other day, and they were so surprised. They said, "Oh, why did you say that?" I said, "Well, I think that blouse is cute." That's the second time I've complimented somebody on a pretty blouse, because it makes a woman feel good. Somebody has to say something nice to somebody. Okay, and I'll say something nice again to Big Ed in the control room, because he is always so good to me, and I really appreciate him finding this Dan Harris. And everybody go to YouTube and check it out. We'll see Dan Harris melt down. Okay, thanks, Ed. Okay, Ed saluting me, and I'm saluting him. Bye-bye now.